The Justice Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Rosa, please call the roll.
Chair Brennan, excused. Vice Chair Smith?
Here.
Ranking Member Valdez?
Good morning, present.
Representatives Beltran?
Here.
Bracy Davis? Campbell?
Here.
Duggan?
Here.
Fabricio?
Here.
Gottlieb? Jacques?
Here.
Redondo?
Here.
Saroy? Snyder?
Here.
Stark?
Here.
Waldron? A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. A quorum being present, I would like to welcome everyone to the Justice Appropriations Subcommittee. As a reminder, please ensure your cell phones and other communication devices are turned off or placed on silent mode. I would also like to ask that anyone speaking before the subcommittee today to please fill out an appearance card and provide it to the staff. Just like to give people a heads up, I'll be filling in for Chairman Brand today, who is not with us. He is ill. We wish him well in his recovery and look forward to getting him back here later in this week. Today's agenda consists of seven bills, member bills, up for consideration. Without further delay, we will go ahead and get started. Also, as a note, at the request of a bill sponsor, Representative Gregory, HB 1179 will not be taken up and considered today. Without objection, let's show that bill temporarily postponed. Next and first on the hit parade today is CS for HB 1135, Lewd or Lascivious Grooming, by Representative Yarkoski. You're recognized to present your bill. And Representative Bankston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, and Ranking Member Valdez. today we're here to talk about, frankly, a terrible matter and something that I think now is more important than ever that we are addressing this. I say all the time that the most vital and fundamentally important function of government, first and foremost, must always be public safety, because without law and order, you know, what do we really have? And within that silo, I always say, what are we doing for our children, right? The most important and righteous work we can do is protecting our children in our communities. what we're attempting to do here today with your vote, I said this analogy last time as well. Last year, we passed the law for capital punishment for those that rape a child under 12. Today, I'm asking for the other bookend, which is the grooming side of this. This is where we have folks operating in the shadows with one intent, and that intent is exploitation of a child, and they do it by way of isolation, intimidation, and manipulation of not only the victim, but also family members along the way. I want to read a couple important statistics to you that I think are important for us to keep in mind as we're considering this bill here today. In the case of a minor, there are three areas of consideration in the recruitment of a minor and how that minor is being groomed. There's general grooming, and the Polaris, which administers the National Human Trafficking Hotline, funded by the U.S. government, reports that on a 9-year study, less than 10% of children that entered into sex trafficking did so through forcible means. More than 90% are lured into, quote, the life through perceived romantic means, gifts, false promises, or survival sex. Fewer than 10% of these cases happen by kidnapping. 100,000 children a year are trafficked in the U.S. Over 90,000 are lured into trafficking through grooming. The largest pipeline of kids into trafficking is by grooming. Second is familial trafficking and grooming. While psychological, physical, sexual, and addictive substances are used for control, grooming is nearly 100% present in all of the interfamilial trafficking scheme. And the third one is online grooming. It says 50% of all targeted victims every day are between the ages of 12 and 15. And they estimate 500,000 predators a day are targeting children. That means over 250,000 children a day are being groomed online. Most grooming is utilizing multi and cross platform apps and games. Folks, I go to the book of John, in the Bible, 10:10, where he says the job of the devil is to rob, kill, and destroy. Every single time this happens, we rob these kids of their innocence, we destroy, we kill their spirit, and we destroy their lives every single time. The closest thing to the devil in human form are the people that prey on our children and sexually assault and rape them. And with your vote here today, we are going to turn on the proverbial lights and let the Holy Spirit into the world of grooming. And no longer are these folks going to operate in the shadows and get away with simply code of conduct violations and potentially losing a job. In Florida, we're taking a stand. You do this in the grooming world all the way to raping our child, a child under 12, and you are going to be hunted, you are going to be arrested and prosecuted to the full extent of the law. And with your vote here today, we are going to establish lewd and lascivious grooming. And Mr. Chair, that is the bill.
Thank you very much for that presentation. Amendments, I see no amendments. We're now in questions. Member questions on the bill. Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair. Rep. Yarkossy, I voted up on the bill in its first committee, but since that point in time, there's been several concerns that have come to me, and I know we didn't have an opportunity, and I apologize because I know you came to me to talk, but I guess the concern is when you talk about general grooming, it seems to many that your bill might encompass sex education classes in schools or even in a religious setting. And I guess, everybody wants to make sure that you can still have those kinds of safe conversations, informative conversations, without running afoul of the criminal punishments that we're creating here. Can you speak on that? Either one of you, obviously.
Representative Bankson, you're recognized to answer the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Great question. I had those very concerns myself, being in ministry. And, we don't want to cast a net that catches the wrong in that net. This is very specific. This is dealing with exploitation versus protection. When it comes to education, health, these other facilities, these are about health and welfare. These are about warning children. And so education helps to protect them from these things. We do not intend to do that within this bill, but there's a form and a pattern that law enforcement has been able to ferret out through these things, and many, as the data was already expressed there, that over 90% of the children that are caught in this are through these means. So we're trying to find, how do we fill that gap? How do we stop that before it damages the children? And we know that children are very impressionable, and having these things at the beginning of their life sets a trajectory that can destroy and damage their entire potential. And so this is a way, literally, to help the good guys stop the bad guys.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing no other questions, Ranking Member Valdez, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. We all agree that this is just terrible, what's going on, absolutely. And I understand that what you're trying to address here is the predatory behavior and grab them, right, and stop them from doing these awful things. I've heard from some of the bill opponents that the bill language is still a little bit too broad and that it could, Representative Gottlieb, that it could impact sex education or even, the covering of STDs and things that nature. Would you be open to an amendment to emphasize that prohibited communication occurs when the speaker is preparing, encouraging, or enticing our young children to engage in conduct with that speaker?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for the question, Ranking Member. The short answer is yes, I'm willing to sit down and have this discussion, but I want to just bring it back to one point that I want you to keep in mind as you're considering these concerns. It comes back to one thing only, and that is, what is the intent that this person has? Are they intending to educate and help the child, or is there a successive history of continually doing things that fit into the mold of isolating, manipulating, and intimidating this child? And sometimes these materials can be used to start desensitizing kids to the topics of sex and different things. But if it happens once or twice, where you have a setting with multiple students or that sort of teacher child relationship, that is not what this is targeting. No detective, state attorney, and by the way, I spoke a lot with the police chiefs, the sheriffs, and the state attorneys on this, and no one's intent is to do anything other than stop the exploitation, not education, and not mentoring or helping. And we have had extensive discussions about this. So I appreciate the question, and I'm happy to talk to you a little more. I know I reached out and it was late yesterday, and it was at a Monday meeting, but I did want to sit with you, ranking member, on this because I do value your opinion, and certainly we're here to get it right. We're not here to create a loophole or get anyone in a gotcha situation. This is about intent of exploitation. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Representative Gottlieb, do you have a question?
Thank you, Chair. So that begs another question, and I'm sorry, but in let me take it again to the school setting and a child, because we've seen this already happen where a child goes to the guidance counselor or talks to a teacher about a sexual orientation, and the teacher talks to that child, but the parents don't agree. Is that a situation where you envision this statute could be used?
Recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Rep, for the question. You know, I'm not in the education system, so I'm not up to speed on the decorum that educators should operate within, but it would seem to me in that situation, if I'm a guidance counselor or a teacher and this question is coming to me by a child under 16, you may want to get someone else in the room and let's have a discussion with multiple people so that there's accountability in that room. That would be something that I would suggest, but it would go back to an investigator would be looking at that and going, what is the intent of that conversation and what happened? And I don't see how that could I just don't see how that can happen in, with the way we have this set up currently.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing no other questions, public testimony. And we have Quinn Diaz from Equality, Florida is waving in opposition. Aaron DiPietro from Florida Family Policy Council waves in support. Jennifer Pritt from the Florida Police Chiefs Association. Cookie's not here, no. Okay, waves in support. Barney Bishop from the Florida Smart Justice Alliance is a proponent of the bill. And we have Keaton Parker is an opponent of the bill, not wishing to speak. There he is, waving in opposition. Or are you coming up to speak? Well, come on up. That's
Keaton. Okay. Hello, my name is Parker Keaton. While I certainly do agree that encouraging or enticing a minor into engaging in unlawful sexual activity should absolutely be prosecuted, the language in this bill really is too vague. I understand that in questioning it has been made clear that it's not the intent for the bill to impact sex ed, but the language does not fully reflect that to make clear what encouragement is. I have definitely heard people argue that sex ed encourages sexual activity, and I want to see that made clear that students can continue to receive this education. Thank you.
Thank you. We have Quinn Swearingen is an opponent of the bill. He's coming up to speak. You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to start out by saying that I do support the bill and most of this language. As somebody who's from Miami and who lives in Orlando, as a former Catholic, I know all too well the impact that trafficking and grooming of a minor can have on a community as a whole, but also on the victims. As a now healed and prospering former victim, not going to let them have the pleasure of that, of childhood sexual assault, I wholeheartedly agree that these protections are very necessary. The only reason I stand in opposition today is because I would like to see specific language that would protect sexual education and more firmly define what constitutes as engagement. What would constitute as grooming in these contexts, just to protect sexual education, as I said. I absolutely understand how the spirit of this bill would take intent into account. specifically protecting sexual education. However, as we all likely know, sometimes the spirit of a law is not enough to actually protect people who are acting in good faith. A lot of the times there are folks who would like to enforce that as to the letter of the law, which is not something that I think we would want in this instance for somebody who is acting in good faith as a sex educator. Having seen how other vague laws and policies have led to certain fiascos in the state, like the book issues that are going on in school boards across the state, and just constant fights about sexual education in school boards across the state as well, it is really concerning that the specific carve-out is not here as it is. That's why I would like to see that. Now, it would also be nice as somebody who has unfortunately had to deal with being a victim of childhood sexual assault. I would love to see if we could even change some of our sex ed rules to sex ed curriculum and rules to specifically include sections about things like enthusiastic consent and just like looking for warning signs of what grooming is to prepare children and to really show them what those signs are to keep them protected, both not only in the law, but also so that they themselves can see the signs and possibly know when to speak up and know when to have these conversations with adults about when they see it happening. But otherwise, that is all. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Next, Paul Ahrens wishes to appear. Your form doesn't say if you're an opponent or proponent, but you are recognized.
I'm an opponent. Morning, my name is Paul Ahrens. I'm a physician retired from the Florida Department of Health. I want to call your attention to reports about the use of the term grooming. Here are two examples. A National Public Radio story dated May 11, 2022, titled, "Accusations of Grooming Are the Latest Political Attack with Homophobic Origins." And a story dated August 10, 2022, new report from Human Rights Campaign warns of social media anti-LGBTQ grooming content. Words have consequences. This bill could achieve its purported purpose if it simply stated, a person 18 or over who maneuvers a person less than 16 into unlawful sexual activity commits a felony. Lewd and lascivious behaviors are already prohibited in Florida law, and the word grooming has taken on a purposeful and specifically anti-LGBTQ connotation. To prevent this bill from having that pejorative and discriminatory effect, the words lewd and lascivious grooming need to be deleted or substituted for. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Next up from Equality Florida, we have John, looks like Mower. All right, and you are an opponent of the bill. You're recognized, sir.
Good morning, Chair and committee members. My name is John Harris Maurer, and I'm the Public Policy Director for Equality Florida. Equality Florida recognizes that child sexual abuse is real and it is devastating. We oppose this bill because, as written, it is overbroad and does not accurately address such predatory behavior. This bill targets, quote, inappropriate communication, which it defines as any verbal, written, or electronic communication that describes, depicts, or demonstrates sexual conduct. But communication about sexual conduct is at the heart of health education that is intended to stop the spread of STDs and stop unwanted pregnancies. Those conversations cannot effectively happen without discussion of sexual conduct. The bill also targets communication with the purpose of, quote, preparing young people to engage in sexual conduct. Again, this is the very definition of what we know can be properly structured as age-appropriate sexual education. What this bill seeks to do is target a predatory motive and predatory patterns of behavior. To be clear, Equality Florida understands and appreciates that goal. But as written, it sweeps too broadly and risks banning, or at the very least chilling, important conversations where there is no harmful intent. It requires further amendment to avoid impacts to important curriculum and resources on sexual health and sexuality to keep our young people safe. Equality Florida asks you to oppose the bill as written. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Anita Hatcher is waving in opposition. And then lastly, we have, looks like Carrie File, representing herself, is an opponent of the bill and wishes to speak. Welcome. You are recognized.
Thank you so much, members. My name is Carrie Feit, and my concerns around this bill come from being a parent of teenagers in public school and also an ally to the LGBTQ community. I also happen to be a lawyer who has read through many bills over my time, and I actually do think this bill is aimed at sexual predators, which we can all get behind, versus an intentional attack to curb sex ed or against the LGBTQ community. However, I have serious concerns about these about the potential impacts. First, as you would think, education about prevention of pregnancy and STDs is very important to me right now, having kids in high school. I rely on sex education in our schools for the safety and well-being of my kids. I'm not an expert in it, and while I do talk to my kids about their bodies and intimacy as best I can, I would hate to think that a teacher or counselor would withhold vital information or support out of fear of this bill. With regards to the words prepare and the bill, the House sponsor's answer to the question about whether condoms could be made available underscores this concern, which was that it depends on the circumstances, which tells us that preventative pregnancy or STD education could possibly be deemed as preparing kids for sexual activity. So those of us with these concerns ask that you make clear that this bill is not to either affect sex education, either in the classroom or at a community event, since the House sponsor has said that this is not the intention of this bill. The other concern, which is as equally or even more dangerous, is the effect this bill will have on the already marginalized LGBTQ community. And that's because of the word grooming, which is politically charged and currently negatively associated with the LGBTQ community. While the use of the word is correctly used in the bill in the traditional sense, because of its current use by those who fear and fail to understand queer people, there is a real likelihood that the threat of criminality in this bill will be used on LGBTQ-affirming parents and teachers, stripping support away from our kids, and may even be used to criminalize LGBTQ youth. Again, I do believe this bill is aimed at sexual predators. And I believe the House sponsor when he said he'd be happy to work on the language to get it right, and I pray that that happens. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak.
Thank you. Seeing no other public testimony. That's a, Well, come on up here. We'll try to find that form. You were recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Ryan Kennedy with the Florida Citizens Alliance, a group of over 260,000 supporters across the state of Florida. Two-thirds of those are 17 and under families with kids in the home still. We're a strong supporter of this bill. At the Florida Citizens Alliance, we particularly have taken an interest in the areas of sex trafficking and human trafficking when it comes to our minors because, as we've seen from multiple reports, Florida ranks amongst one of the highest in the country when it comes to this. We think the language in the bill is good. We need a definition in place to codify what this is because, again, the purpose from our perspective is we need to stop this act before it happens. We don't want it to get to the point where someone is becoming sex trafficked because of decisions that they had made under false pretenses or because of the grooming that has taken place with them. I spoke personally with a person who had been groomed as a child who went through sex trafficking, and they had said that in law there was not any sort of definition on the subject. So they liked the fact that there was being an effort being done about that. So I want to thank the both sponsors for this great bill, and thank you.
Thank you. Okay. No other public testimony. We will move into debate. Members wishing to debate, we see Representative Gottlieb. You are recognized in debate, sir.
Thank you, Chair. So I remain up on the bill because I do think it's good policy, and I've spoken with, both reps who are bringing it. I do see the other side, though. So, you know, if you look at lines 16 to 19, it's very vague as to what inappropriate communication or conduct means. It means any verbal, written, or electronic communication or conduct in which a person describes, depicts, or demonstrates sexual conduct or sexual excitement. So I think that's the problem there is that could be a pastor talking to a child. It could be a mom talking to a child. It could be a licensed mental health professional. But then I think where it kind of gets cleared up is when you look at lines 26 to 33, which is really the substance of the bill, in preparing, encouraging, or enticing such a person to engage in unlawful sexual activity, sexual conduct, or sexual performance. So it does kind of get cleared up. But, you know, if a child were to go to a clinic and ask for condoms, there is a potential real fear that clinic is engaging in a pattern of conduct. So, I think, again, it's great policy, but it could be refined in a way that alleviates the concerns of those people who want to do good work keeping children safe and not stifle those communications. So, again, I'm up, and hopefully we can land at a better place in judiciary.
Others in debate. Ranking Member Valdez, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I really do appreciate the conversation, and the spirit of the bill is phenomenal. I'll be up on it today, and I would really love to work with you on bringing up an amendment and trying to clarify those concerns because, you know, think about it, children, they're so innocent. And reminding them of stranger danger is still very important for us to communicate to the kids. And having said that, because they're so impressionable, I think that sometimes the education that also comes from home and starts at home, but then winds up having these curriculums that are safe, given by folks who are trusted individuals to give that information is really important. And maybe hopefully I like the suggestion of tweaking the curriculum to begin to talk, to show what are some of these symptoms, because they may not even know that that's what's happening because they maybe have a trust in that individual that otherwise wouldn't have a reason not to trust them. Does that make sense? So I'm hoping that I'll be more than happy to work with you to bring about a clarifying language so that then those concerns of that have been brought up today by the public are addressed and still remain to keep our children safe. And those practitioners, whether they be teachers or church clergy that are giving these types of chats to students, to kids, are still also protected. So then this is the village, right? So if we cannot punish the village in an unintended consequence for trying to keep children safe, I would like to see if we can work together and bring about an amendment to clarify that. But I'll be up on the bill today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Beltran, in debate.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Rep, for this bill. I just want to, I guess, address or acknowledge some comments from the public today. I guess it is not the first time. I guess I've been sitting actually in this room. We always seem to be in this room when we do these sorts of bills. I don't know why. This is something about the scheduling of the committee room. But I've been sitting in this room. I've said this before. I'm going to say it again. We're passing generally applicable laws that apply to everyone. I've looked at the text of this law. I don't think it targets. I don't think there's any intent in the heart of any of the sponsors to single out any group. In fact, you know, when I got this bill, when we had a conversation or at least a text exchange about the bill, and I thought about, you know, people, what this bill sounds to me is it's supposed to prevent pimps from enticing young ladies into sex trafficking. That's what I thought about with this bill. I didn't think about any other scenarios or targeting any groups, and that's not my intent when I vote up on this bill. I don't think it's the intent of anyone on this dais or anyone in the legislature or anyone in this room. I want to be very clear about that. So that's kind of the scenario that I thought about when you brought the bill, and I think the problem that you're trying to alleviate. And I looked at the bill history and the bill analysis. I see that you made some fairly extensive changes in criminal justice, which says to me that you're a bill sponsor who's willing to work the bill and maybe work some additional language to give everyone a heightened level of comfort on the bill. But I just did want to add that. I don't think there have been other bills that have been passed out of this room. I think the same thing of those bills, certainly, just trying to protect children and, you know, from any person who may do bad things and never, you know, contemplating targeting one group or another. I just want to be very clear about that because I think it's important. I think it's important to folks who have come to testify today, and it's certainly important to me that at least we say that and, you know, make that clear. Thank you.
Okay, others wishing to debate? Seeing no others in debate, Representative Yarkoski, you are recognized to close on CS for HB 1135.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to say a couple quick things, and then I'm going to hand it over to Representative Banks. And I just want to thank FDLE, Commissioner Glass, and Special Agent Mike Duffy have been instrumental in this. Couldn't have done it without their help. So I want to thank them. I want to comment on a couple of the sponsors as well. I know the Equality Florida folks spoke again. I offered to them last time, come see me. Let's sit down and talk. And I meant it, and I've not heard anything. So that offer stands, and I do want to sit and have this discussion. I also want to talk about what the doctor said about the condoms, the lady that came up and mentioned the condoms. My comment about that was, if that is part of a successive pattern with the intent, like the teacher says, hey, let's go to the health fair, and then a condom gets thrown out, and they use that as an exhibit to further their grooming, right? That's what I'm talking about, not in a specific situation where it's just a one-off. I understand this grooming word, and I get that that's sensitive to certain people, and it's been used in all different ways. But folks, enough's enough. We got to call this what it is. Enough about feelings and emotions. We've got to get back to principles and standards, okay? This is not about that. You know, we're making this confusing, and I think sometimes that's by design. The Bible says God is not the author of confusion. We're not here to confuse people. We're here to get it right. And I want to say, you know, going back to Rep. Gottlieb and ranking members' comments, it's about intent. And as I'm hearing what he read in the first comment, and Rep. Banks and I were talking, I think we need to incorporate in there possibly this intent of exploitation in that language, and we will take a look at that before the judiciary stop. You have my word, because again, we're not trying to entrap anyone, and it's certainly not about any group here. This is about bad people with one intent, and it is to exploit and use that child either for their own sexual gratification or for a commercial purpose, and that is what we're trying to stop here today. With that, I'm going to hand it over to Rep. Bankson, say a couple words, and I thank you all again for your understanding and for your cooperation.
Thank you again today for this opportunity. I want to thank Representative Yarkoski for including me. This is something that's very passionate for my heart, and I think that's the tone that we've seen even in last session and this session. It's about protecting our children and watching out for them. We can't use props, or like any grandparent, I'd show you the pictures. You know, the ones that we love, we want to care for, we want to watch out for them. The intent of this bill, I think, has been demonstrated. It is to stop those with criminal intent, those who would take advantage of the innocence of our children for a nefarious purpose. It is not to stop those who desire to protect them, help them, watch out for them, give them a forum to be able to express what is in their hearts and help them along their journey. I think about that word grooming, and again, it's how a word is used. I remember when I was a child, my grandmother sold a little bit of Avon on the side, if you remember those days, and there was a little baseball bat that had some hair trainer in it, and it was groomer. And if that didn't work, she would lick her hand. We've all been there. The bottom line was it was to try and force my hair to go a certain direction that at that point it did not want to go. There's good grooming, but there is bad grooming. And this delineates between the two. And again, we will continue to work to make sure that is clear so that genuine-hearted people whose intent is to help and watch out for children are not caught in some dragnet. You know, I shared in the first stop that there's a famous passage of Scripture where Jesus himself, there was a day he was walking among the crowds as he loved to do. And of course, there were little children that came up to him, and his men began to shush them away. No, no, don't bother him. He's too busy. And he stopped them. He said, no, wait a minute. Allow those children to come to me. And he stopped, and it says he put his hands upon them and blessed them. And he said, unless you're like this, you can't even enter the kingdom. And yet then he turned the opposite way, and he said, but woe to those who would harm such little ones. So we see both the caring nature of God, which is demonstrated, and I believe we're all in agreement there. But we also see the warning that we must protect their innocence. That is the heart of this bill. We will get this bill right, And I do believe that this is something that everyone can know, what at the end of the day, this is something that you will be glad that your name was a part of this bill. And so we ask you for a favorable support as we continue to make this exactly what it needs to be. And again, with our FDLE and those who have given us the information, help the good guys stop the bad guys. With that, I close.
All right, Representative Bankson and Yarkovsky, having closed on the bill, Rosa, please call the roll.
Chair Brannon? Vice Chair Smith?
Yes.
Ranking Member Valdez?
Yes.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Bracy Davis?
Yes.
Campbell? Duggan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Jacques?
Yes.
Redondo?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
13 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you. By your vote, we'll report that favorably. Next up will be House Bill 1595, Controlled Substances, by Representative Plakin. Representative Plakin, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Chair. Really appreciate the opportunity to present HB 1595 today. The bill codifies the Florida Attorney General's temporary emergency rule, adding thioneptine to the list of Schedule I controlled substances. Thioneptine was previously sold at gas stations and products under the guise of treating brain function or treating anxiety, and has become known as gas station heroin. Over the past few years, it has become clear that the drug has been responsible for serious side effects, including respiratory depression, loss of consciousness, and even death. The FDA has not approved thioneptine for any medical use, and it was previously unregulated. When used in high doses, the effects are similar to an opioid and highly addictive, so the FDA is now issuing warnings as well. And according to the Attorney General's office, 11 states total have banned this drug. So financially, the bill may have a positive indeterminate impact on jail and prison beds, and that is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thanking us. Thank you for the presentation. I see no amendments. Questions on the bill? All right, seeing no questions, we'll go into public testimony. We've got Barney Bishop from the Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waves in support. And Libby Guzzo, Office of the Attorney General, is also waving in support. I see no other public testimony, nobody wishing to speak. Debate, members, we're now in debate. Any members wishing to debate? Seeing none, Representative Plakin, you are clear to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chair. Wave close.
Having wave close, Rosa, please call the roll.
Chair Brannon, Vice Chair Smith.
Yes.
Ranking Member Valdez.
Yes.
Representatives Beltran.
Yes.
Bracy Davis. Campbell. Duggan.
Yes.
Fabricio.
Yes.
Gottlieb.
Yes.
Jacques.
Yes.
Redondo.
Yes.
Saroy.
Yes.
Snyder.
Yes.
Stark.
Yes.
Waldron.
Yes.
12 yeas, 0 nays.
All right, we will report that bill favorably. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next up, we have House Bill 919, Artificial Intelligence Use in Political Advertising, by Representative Rizzo. Sir, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you very much, Chairman, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, and members. HB 919, Use of Artificial Intelligence in Political Advertising. The increasing access of sophisticated AI-generated content threatens the integrity of elections by facilitating the dissemination of misleading or completely fabricated information that appears more realistic than ever. The technology that produces this content has advanced rapidly and outpaced government regulation. HB 919 seeks to address the rising concern of deceptive campaign advertising by mandating disclaimers on political ads that contain certain content generated through artificial intelligence. The bill defines generative artificial intelligence as a machine-based system that can, for a given set of human-defined objectives, emulate the structure and characteristics of input data in order to generate derived synthetic content, including images, video, audio, text, and other digital content. It is the creation of new content that sets generative artificial intelligence apart from the artificial intelligence that is used to make predictions or carry out analytical tasks based on inputs and learned behaviors. Importantly, the bill applies to generative AI content only when two conditions apply. One, when it is used in a political advertisement, and two, when it depicts a real person performing an action that did not occur or actually occur. The bill respects First Amendment rights by simply requiring a disclaimer and not prohibiting or limiting the content of the ad. The disclaimer must state that the ad was created in whole or in part with the use of generative artificial intelligence. This disclaimer requirement empowers voters to make informed decisions based on authentic information rather than deceptive content. Consistent with other civil penalties for election-related violations, fines may be imposed for failing to include a disclaimer, up to $2,500 per count for the first three offenses, and up to $7,500 for each subsequent count beginning with the fourth offense. Finally, this bill establishes a process for conducting an expedited hearing when a complaint is filed alleging a violation of this new provision. This would allow for rapid resolution of a complaint and ensure that voters are aware of the artificial nature of certain materials in campaign ads. This expedited process was modeled after a similar provision in Florida's stolen valor law that quickly resolved disputes regarding candidates misrepresenting military service. Voters are entitled to accurate and truthful information about political candidates and issues. This bill establishes a framework for holding political candidates and committees accountable for the content they disseminate. And that is the bill.
All right, thank you very much. I see no amendments on the bill. Questions? We're in questions on the bill. Representative Waldron, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you very much. My question has to do with the disclaimer and how visible it will be for people.
You're recognized to answer that.
Thank you.
On the disclaimer.
Thank you. And Representative, and I apologize if we didn't get a chance to talk about this bill. I kind of ran out of some time. There's a lot going on in the Senate. Senator DeSigley is my counterpart over there and the sponsor of the bill. And the bill has been moving, and there are amendments that we're working on together. And if it passes this committee, I believe that I will present those amendments at the next stop. One of those amendments happens to do with the size of the font, possibly changing a bit the disclaimer, what it will say, and also adding an audible disclaimer somewhat akin to the paid political advertisement disclaimer that we have currently.
All right. Any other questions? No questions. Public testimony? We have no public testimony forms. Debate, members, we are now in debate. All right. Seeing no debate, Representative Rizzo, you are recognized to close on HB 1 or 919.
I wave close.
Oh, having waved close, Rosa, please call the roll.
Chair Brannon, Vice Chair Smith.
Yes.
Ranking Member Valdez.
Yes.
Representative Beltran.
Yes.
Gracie Davis. Campbell. Duggan.
Yes.
Fabricio.
Absolutely yes.
Gottlieb.
Yes.
Jacques.
Yes.
Redondo.
Yes.
Saroy. Yes. Snyder.
Yes.
Stark.
Yes.
Waldron.
Yes.
12 yeas, 0 nays.
All right. By your vote, we will report that bill favorably.
Thank you.
Next up is CS for HB 1181, Juvenile Justice, by Representative Jocks. You're recognized to present from your chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill enhances public safety and ensures accountability in our juvenile justice system. It does so by doing several things. Number one, it upgrades penalties for juvenile gun crimes, upgrading minor possession of a firearm from a first-degree misdemeanor to a third-degree felony. It also touches on detention and supervised release on any gun charge now or any gun crime offense. There is a presumption of danger to the community, and so a court will hold a juvenile in detention until an adjudicatory hearing, the safety of the community is satisfied. And if a judge were to release that juvenile, they would have to put it in written findings as to why they think that juvenile should have been released. Also, regarding probation, it eliminates post-commitment probation as a community supervision tool and exchanges it with the conditional release approach, which allows the Department of Juvenile Justice to have more immediate accountability as opposed to being bogged down in the post-commitment probation process in our courts. And the conditional release approach allows accountability up to 21 years of age. Additionally, contraband is taken on in this bill. It standardizes the penalty for any introduction of contraband into any juvenile justice facility, standardizing it to a second-degree felony up to 15 years in prison. Educational records will now be allowed to be used in court without parental consent to show that whether or not youth are complying with the terms of their of the condition of their court order probation and whether or not they are behaving in school. And also on civil citation, it changes, it renames civil citation to the delinquency citation and clarifies that firearm offenses are not eligible for delinquency citations. Among other things, that is the bill.
All right, thank you. We have no amendments. Then we will look at questions. Questions on the bill. Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you. Representative Zox, what's the anticipated cost per day for keeping a juvenile for the 21 days and then beyond?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The cost per day, I can look into that for you to see what that would be, but I will point to the staff analysis regarding the fiscal impact that current resources that are budgeted for the Department of Juvenile Justice would be able to absorb some of the indeterminate costs.
All right, are you recognized for a follow-up?
Thank you, Chair. How about the cost to the judicial system for having to hold a hearing every 7 days beyond the initial 21 days?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Same answer.
Follow-up? You're recognized.
Thank you. Meaning that the judicial system is going to absorb the cost of these additional hearings, including transportation of the child to and from the courthouse and the additional court time?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, so there's an indeterminate cost, but the analysis makes it clear that based on current budgeting, there should be enough to absorb any kind of increase of costs.
And you're recognized there again for a question.
Thank you, Chair. What about any mental health counseling that these kids might need while they're in the program and additional schooling, keeping them up to pace with the school that they were in, assuming they were in school? What kind of programming is going to be offered for the kids?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All of those services are still available. As you know, the Department of Juvenile Justice, its approach is very different than the adult system. And so there's still that rehabilitative mission, and that will still be adhered to once these youth are being held in custody.
Thank you, Chair.
All right, thank you very much for that. Public testimony, we have some public testimony forms here. So we have Jennifer Pritt. Waves in support from the Florida Police Chiefs Association. Also, we have Jonathan Weber from SPLC Action Fund, waves in opposition. Also, there we go. Barney Bishop is a proponent of the bill from Florida Smart Justice Alliance. Allie McNair is a proponent of the bill from the Florida Sheriff's Association. And we have Chancellor Teal, Florida Department of Juvenile Justice, if that's right, and waves in support. Also, Libby Guzzo, Office of the Attorney General, waves in support. Tim Parson, waves in support, Florida Sheriff's Association. And Tim Parson, also representing Lutheran Services Florida, waves in support. And Christian Miner, Florida Juvenile Justice Association, waves in support. See no other public testimony. All right, let's debate. Members in debate. Ranking Member Valdez, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Unfortunately, today I can't support this bill. I think that we need to really think about how these youth are obtaining these firearms. And until I start seeing some pieces of legislation that holds adults responsible for keeping their arms not stored away in a safe place. They might leave them in their car with doors unlocked and, you know, easy access to weapons. And as our kids are, you know, doing their mischievous work out there and they have access to these guns, you know, imposing these types of severe penalties, considering that the court already has the opportunity of extending the child's 21 days in detention for public safety, and there's already safeguards around. Absolutely, these acts that are happening are horrible, but I think that we need to do something to hold adults accountable that have weapons stored in places that are not safe and easy accessible for anyone to have access to see some sort of legislation that holds them accountable. So for today, I just can't continue to seeing our kids being put into that trajectory without really holding adults accountable for their lack of responsibility when it comes to having a firearm. That firearm, yes, we do have our Second Amendment rights to carry them, but we also have the right to keep them in stored in place so that they're not accessible and get in the wrong hands. So for this today, I cannot just continue to see how we're putting our children in another system and creating less opportunities for them to really just thrive. So for that today, I won't be able to support this bill.
All right, thank you. Representative Gottlieb, in debate.
Thank you, Chair. So there's no doubt that we have a gun problem in the United States. We have an epidemic of violence. There's also no doubt that Secretary Hall is doing a phenomenal job, and I think we've all applauded him in his efforts to create a wonderful education environment in DJJ, whether it's short-term or long-term. But the short-term holds don't come with the same programs necessarily that they have in the long-term programs. And I think what we're talking about is we're talking about children that are already in need of services. We're taking them out of society. And I think the worst part of the bill is that there's a presumption that they be held. So we're telling the judge, you got to hold this kid regardless of how serious the offense is, regardless of the child's needs. And then that presumption goes beyond the 21st day. We know that criminal cases don't get filed until typically the 21st day. So there's no room really for the defense to get their education, to get the discovery, to know what they're facing, to fight the charge. Then you get an arraignment, which comes 10 to 14 days after the charges have been filed. So now we're at the 31st day. Then, assuming a public defender gets appointed, they're then getting their first look at the case. They get discovery 2 weeks later. So now we're 2 months into an incarceration for a child who's in need of services. And again, I'm not condemning DJJ. They're doing a great job. But we could be spending this money on services outside of a jail setting instead of giving a kid PTSD, adding to their anxiety, adding to their depression. And we should be spending our money making sure that the adults who are giving them guns are being properly punished. Those are supposed to be right-minded thinking people over the age of 24 who aren't being held accountable for the unsafe storage. I understand the intent behind the bill, but we should be fixing the real problem, which is the proliferation of guns in our society and the ability for them to get into the hands of people who shouldn't be holding them in the first place.
All right, thank you. Representative Snyder, in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I first just want to start by applauding the bill sponsor once again for just using your experience. Not only have you done extensive work in this space already in the education realm, but looking at how we address the gun epidemic of guns in the hands of bad guys and how we crack down on that. And I don't think that just because, you know, a soft target, it does not make an excuse for breaking into someone's home or vehicle. However, I'll agree with you, Ranking Member, that certainly is a problem. But I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up the work that we've done coming through this committee on traveling criminals. And we know that oftentimes these juveniles didn't just wake up one day and decide that they were going to go try and get their hands on a gun. A lot of times these are individuals that have been brought, you know, tragically into gang activity. And I think when that interaction happens with law enforcement, if there was a group where we had to say, if we've got to get them by the face mask and get that one opportunity to scare them straight and say that if you are walking around illegally possessing a gun, we let them go before we know it, especially if they're in that gang environment, they're going to rack up another charge. And the score sheet continues to pile up and pile up, and before we know it, the chance for grace and mercy has gone out the window. And so I think what we are trying to do is say, how do we get these individuals in the hands of the professionals, in the resources, where they can get that that wake-up call, if you will, to try and get their life back on track before it is too late. And just to piggyback off of Representative Gottlieb's comment, kudos to the DJJ staff. If you have not gone to tour, I know so often there's an emphasis on our DOC facilities and the tours there, but go to a juvenile facility. And not just the long term, there's also the short term holdings. And that's what gives me the confidence, having seen the work that's happening there, to know that we have this individual to get these kids some help. I'll be voting up on the bill today and encourage members to do the same.
Representative Beltran, end debate.
Thank you, everyone, for the discussion as always. And I certainly appreciate comments from my colleagues. I too believe in safe storage of firearms. I want to start there. Then I want to kind of pick up where Rep. Snyder left off. We in fact do have a safe storage law in Florida, and it's important that everyone store their firearms safely. I mean, the firearms should be secured, particularly when you are keeping them in or around people who are under 18. That's in the house. You should keep them in a safe or in one of these. I mean, they have lock boxes that you can just have a fingerprint sensor or a code that takes only a few seconds to open those. Or in the car, you keep them in your glove box. You lock your glove box. Some of these things go beyond what the safe storage law requires, but that's all about personal responsibility and responsible gun ownership, which I strongly support. So I'll say that, and this is the first time in 6 years that we've had a discussion about safe storage of firearms in this committee or any other committee of the legislature. Certainly, if there's a way to improve those laws or to have a program about education or firearm safety without impairing the Second Amendment, then I'm all for that. But in terms of what the bill does is it gets rid of what I perceive to be excessive leniency for a lot of juvenile offenses when they commit serious crimes. And I'm not talking, I mean, committing an offense with a firearm is very much removed from, you know, smoking pot in the park. I mean, this is a serious offense. You're not even supposed to possess a firearm unsupervised, and yet you are now committing a felony with the firearm, and you may not even be detained. I mean, I think there is a presumption that that's a danger to the community. There's presumptions that drug dealing without a firearm is a danger to the community, at least in federal law. So this is not some crazy presumption. And what we have, frankly, in our state system, with all due respect to the folks who work there, is we have excessive leniency for juvenile and young adult offenders. And what happens is they commit crimes, they get slaps on the wrist. I've been in federal court, and I've gotten a rap sheet of a young man, you say, like 24, and he's, you know, he's got like 6 misdemeanors and 4 felonies. And you look at the rap sheet, and he's never done more than a night in jail. And then they're in jail, they've been charged with something very serious, where they're basically going to spend the rest of their youth. They're going to lose the rest of their youth. They're going to get some sort of 10, 15, 20-year mandatory minimum sentence. And you've gone from almost no punishment at all to really life-changing punishment overnight. And it's because our system teaches young folks that crimes can be committed with impunity until you get federal charges, apparently. And then, you know, basically the sentences are borderline draconian. So, you know, I think if you have graduated punishments, you show that these crimes cannot be committed with impunity. You put them in for a couple of weeks, as opposed to putting them in for 10 or 20 years later on, in their, you know, 5 or 6 years later. I think you're actually doing a service to everyone. You're promoting respect for the law, and you're preventing folks from making a habit out of these criminal acts. So, with that, I'll be up on the bill, because I just think it's, you know, we're really doing a disservice to society, but also to young offenders who really do need that rehabilitation that the bill sponsor spoke about. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any other members wishing to debate? Seeing none, Representative Jocks, you're recognized to close on CS for HB 1181.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I won't be long. A lot of great things were said during the debate, and I appreciate my colleagues for their input. But just to summarize, and Representative Beltran, you know, hit this in a very strong way, is that not only does this enhance public safety because what these youth are doing are very brazen acts, right? And they're not thinking it through, and somebody is going to end up getting harmed or killed. And secondarily, it sets them up for success, right? Because when I was a prosecutor prosecuting in the adult system, I also saw those rap sheets that Representative Beltran mentioned. And the fact of the matter is you see the in and outs of the system, but very little time was spent, you know, in a detention facility because it was in the juvenile system, which is, of course, the mission is rehabilitation. But it sets them up for failure if they think they can keep getting away with it over and over and over again. And then one day they're going to be facing a prosecutor in adult court being very confused as to why they're being held responsible in a very strong way, being very confused that they're going to now spend many years, 10, 15 years on a mandatory minimum because of something they got away with when they were a kid. And so please, I urge you to please work with us on this because we're not trying to do anything crazy here. We're trying to keep our community safe when we're trying to set up these kids for failure. And we have a great Department of Juvenile Justice that will see to that. I ask you for your favorable support. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Representative Jocks. Having closed on the bill, Rosa, please call the roll.
Chair Brannon? Vice Chair Smith?
Yes.
Ranking Member Valdez?
No.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Gracie Davis? Campbell? Duggan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
No.
Jacques?
Yes.
Redondo?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
10 yeas, 2 nays.
All right, by your votes, we'll record that bill favorably. Next bill we have up is CS for HB 801, Alzheimer's Disease and Related Dementia Training for Law Enforcement Officers by Representative Buchanan. Representative Buchanan, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good Monday afternoon, members. It's great to be with you. As many of you may know, by the end of 2025, there'll be roughly 720,000 plus Floridians who will be diagnosed with some form of Alzheimer's or dementia-related disease, of which 6 in 10 over the course of that diagnose have a tendency to wander, which increase the likelihood and time of interactions with law enforcement. This bill, HB 801, will make sure that we have a voluntary continuing education component for law enforcement that will be created through FDLE and Department of Elder Affairs, of which will be a 4-hour continuing education course, of which will be voluntary, that will be part as an option that they could take towards their 40 hours continuing education over 4 years. That is the bill.
Thank you very much. We have no amendments. Questions? Representative Gottlieb, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair. I fully support the bill. I voted up on it once before, and I think I had asked you a question about ASD, which is spectrum disorders. There is another bill traveling through the House. I don't know if it's moved yet or not. Does the same exact thing, I believe, that your bill does, but for spectrum disorders. I'm just wondering if the two of them can be combined because there is a synergy between spectrum disorders and Alzheimer's, even for a longer course. I'm not trying to shorten the course for officers who are seeking, I forget what the training's called, but this kind of training. Just wondering if they could be combined or maybe even make a more expansive program, essentially, is my question.
You're recognized to address that if you're familiar with the other bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that was something that we discussed in the previous stop, of which it'd be something I'd be happy to have a conversation with the other bill sponsor. I do believe the bills are somewhat different in nature in terms of the approach, but it'd certainly be something I'd be open to having that conversation with the bill sponsor. And I was thinking you were going to ask me about flamingos, so I'm glad to hear that.
All right. Other questions? Representative Stark for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep. Buchanan, the autism bill that Representative Gottlieb is talking about is my bill, and it is on agenda for tomorrow. But if it is something that we need to talk about, I have talked to a couple chairs about that, so that it's kind of a back-and-forth issue. I'd be happy to discuss it with you. But the bill itself is similar to yours, except for it's mandatory 4 hours training in person. So there's some differences between the language of Alzheimer approach and autism approach. So be happy to have that discussion.
Any other questions? Seeing no other questions, public testimony. We do have some. Karen Murillo from AARP waves in support. Hello. Also, Barney Bishop from Florida Smart Justice waves in support. Olivia Babis from Disability Rights Florida is a proponent of the bill and wishes to speak. And you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. We are supportive of the bill. We think this is a great first step towards training, but we're hoping that this isn't the last step. One thing that we would like to see in the bill, I don't know if people remember last session, we passed a law enforcement persons with disabilities registry bill. This allows local law enforcement agencies to maintain registries of people with disabilities. So we feel in those areas, especially, if we're going to make the assertion that registries keep people safer, which anecdotally we have some doubts about, but we need to make sure that the officers engaging with those individuals have training. This should not be voluntary in the areas that maintain these lists. But we are supportive of the bill, and I'm happy to have discussions with the bill sponsor about possibly an amendment for that. So thank you.
Thank you very much. We have Alex Anderson from the Alzheimer's Association is waving in support. And that is it for public testimony. Members, we're in debate. Any member wishing to debate? We do not have your form. So come on up here. You're recognized.
Chairman Brennan, Vice Chair Smith, Minority Ranking Member Valdez, and committee members, thank you for allowing me to address you today. My name is Kaylin John-Louis. I am one of the many faces of Alzheimer's. I'm currently a student at Florida A&M University, and I am here in support of HB 801. I have been a caregiver for my grandmother, who is currently living with Alzheimer's dementia since she was diagnosed in 2017. I also simultaneously cared for my great-grandmother, who passed away exactly 2 years ago today from the disease. As a caregiving youth navigating through this journey, I have learned how critical Alzheimer's education and training are for any individual or professional who interacts with the dementia community. Learning communication strategies, how to handle behaviors, and de-escalation strategies are imperative when dealing with individuals with Alzheimer's. I cannot tell you the number of situations that could have been exacerbated with my grandmother if my mother and I had not sought training to be her caregiver. My grandmother has wandered from her home 2 times. We were fortunate that neighbors saw her and were able to get her back home safely. However, we also understand that's not the case for everyone. To handle that, or to know that law enforcement have the training on how to handle situations with those with Alzheimer's, provides me peace of mind. As someone who served as the past president of the Tallahassee Police Department's Youth Citizens Advisory Council, I understand the challenges our law enforcement face, and I want to make sure that Florida's law enforcement has the finest resources they need to address situations with Alzheimer's individuals properly. Again, thank you so much for your time. I am honored to speak on behalf of over 500,000 living with Alzheimer's here in Florida and their caregivers. I ask for your favorable support.
Thank you very much. Seeing no other public testimony, we'll now go into debate. Members wishing to debate the bill. Ranking Member Valdez, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Representative Brennan, thank you for bringing forward this bill. As the last speaker came up and addressed us, this is very near and dear to my heart. My mother was a patient of Alzheimer's, and let me tell you, that disease is horrible. Sometimes they're so scared, they don't know where they are, they're so disoriented, and it could cause some problems for them. So I applaud your efforts in trying to continue the training for law enforcement to help in this area. So from my family, bottom of my heart. Thank you very much for bringing forward this bill.
Representative Stark, end debate. No? Okay. Sorry, you must have flinched and I caught it out of the corner of my eye. All right, seeing no other debate, Representative Buchanan, you're recognized to close on CS for HB 801.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Valdez, for those remarks and the remarks of the folks that have come up to testify. So many of us have had an opportunity or have known someone close to us that have suffered from dementia or Alzheimer's. For me, as a kid, my grandfather lived with us for the last 10 years of his life. He had early onset Alzheimer's. And so, you know, I got to see over time not only how he physically changed, but how his personality changed. So I think it's something that's important that we make sure that law enforcement and folks that will be interacting with folks, and he was also a wanderer, by the way, that are outward-facing members of the public that are inflicted with Alzheimer's or some sort of dementia have an idea of how to best work with those folks in our community. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Buchanan, having closed on the bill, Rosa, please call the roll.
Chair Brennan? Vice Chair Smith?
Yes.
Ranking Member Valdez?
Yes.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Bracy Davis? Campbell?
Yes.
Duggan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Jacques?
Yes.
Redondo?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
13 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you very much, and by your vote, we will record that favorably. Next up is CS for HB 45, Hope Cards for Persons Issued Orders of Protection by Representative Gottlieb. Representative Gottlieb, you're cleared to present your bill.
Thank you, Chair. I have a, I guess it's a, I don't know if it's a strike call. I think it is a strike call. Would you prefer I present the bill and then the amendment?
Please go over the bill briefly, and then we'll jump into the amendment.
Yes, sir. Members, this is House Bill 45. House Bill 45 creates a Hope Card. What the Hope Card does is rather than a petitioner in a restraining order having to carry around an entire package or having the clerk transmit that to an individual, it provides an extra layer of protection where they carry around basically a laminated card, or I think the bill changes that, but carry around a card that has the particulars of the restraining order so that if the petitioner is in contact with the respondent, they can simply call law enforcement, show them the card, and let them help avoid an emergency situation. That is what the bill does. It's a victim-centric bill, Chair.
All right, thank you very much. And now, Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized to explain the amendment, barcode 108561.
Thank you, Chair. What the amendment does is makes certain improvements on the bill. The improvements were brought to me by the clerk of courts, and I want to thank your staff for putting them, for figuring all the loopholes out here. The amendment requires the clerk of courts, in consultation with the Office of the Attorney General, to create and implement the Hope Card program. It removes the provision allowing for Hope Cards from foreign court orders of protection. That was a little unnecessary. It addresses the timeline and workload concerns for the clerks by removing the effective date to October 1st of 2024, revising the information that is required on the card. We had way too much in the initial bill to be displayed on the Hope Card, and removing the certified mail delivery requirement. The amendment also significantly reduces the fiscal impact and cost of producing the cards down from what was projected at $45 a card to $10 per card, providing for cost avoidance of an estimated $618,000+ to implement the program. That is the amendment, sir.
Thank you. Questions on the amendment? Representative Duggan, question on the amendment.
Actually, thank you. I'll wait till we're back on the bill as amended. Thank you.
Understood. Any other questions on the amendment? Seeing none, debate on the amendment. We have public testimony. We have nothing, no public testimony. Debate on the amendment, seeing none. All in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
All right, all opposed, I see none there. The amendment is adopted, so we are now back on the bill as amended. Questions on the bill as amended. Representative Duggan, you're recognized for a question on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for this good bill. So I think it's a great concept. I really like it. What
what is going to be the process for once the protective order has expired or been vacated or, you know, for some other reason is no longer necessary? What is to prevent somebody from continuing to utilize that card in some fashion, selling that card on a black market, similar to fake, you know, legitimate IDs that are passed down to underage kids, things of that nature?
Thank you.
And you're recognized to answer the question.
Thank you. That's an excellent question. And had I done a thorough presentation of the bill, I would have included that in my presentation. Actually, there is, and I'm trying to get to the line number. It's in the, oh, I don't have my glasses on. That's why I can't see it. It's in the bill. We have, it creates a misdemeanor offense. If somebody utilizes the card after the expiration should be 2 years, I believe, in the strike all. Let me see. It's in the, I want to get to the right portion. I know we created it. But essentially, they would be subject to a misdemeanor offense for utilizing the card after its expiration, or if it was, if in the event that a petition was denied or dismissed, they wouldn't have the card. So it's only in the event that a card was granted, and the improper use of the card becomes a misdemeanor offense. I don't know why I can't find the line number.
You're recognized for a follow-up question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So is there an obligation to surrender the card at some point, or just the card becomes void after 2 years on its own terms?
It just becomes void after 2 years on its own. I will add, first of all, and I thank my able lawyer friend here, Rep. Redondo, for showing me it's at lines 82 to 88 in the bill is where it creates the misdemeanor offense. We didn't think about a surrender, and that's something maybe that we could do. It would add an additional cost to the clerk in having to make sure that it's surrendered and retained. What I will say is what this bill is doing is giving the person who carries the card the option of simply having it. It doesn't end law enforcement's obligation, which they always do, to have to verify that a restraining order is indeed in effect. What it does is, I think, it helps a law enforcement officer by giving them reasonable suspicion that the two individuals shouldn't be near each other. It gives them, I think, greater grounds to hold and detain a person while they conduct their investigation. So that if a person, and again, if a person uses the card after its expiration, they are subject to a misdemeanor offense.
Seeing no other questions, public testimony. We have some cards. So we have Barney Bishop from the Florida Smart Justice Alliance waves in support. And Lisa Hurley, Family Law Section of the Florida Bar, also waves in support. Seeing no other public testimony, we're in debate. Members on in debate. Seeing no debate, Representative Gottlieb, you are recognized to close on CS for HB 45.
Thank you, Chair. If anybody sees any issues with the bill, I'm certainly amenable to perfecting it. I do think it's a good bill. As I said, it's victim-centric, and it's going to help individuals who need that extra layer of protection to keep a respondent away from them and let law enforcement know with greater immediacy that the two individuals should be apart. I look for your favorable support.
Thank you. Having closed on the bill, Rosa, please call the roll.
Chair Brannon, Vice Chair Smith.
Yes.
Ranking Member Valdez.
Yes.
Representatives Beltran.
Yes.
Gracie Davis. Campbell.
Yes.
Duggan.
Yes.
Fabricio.
Yes.
Gottlieb.
Yes.
Jacques.
Yes.
Redondo.
Yes.
Saroy.
Yes.
Snyder.
Yes.
Stark.
Yes.
Waldron.
Yes.
13 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you. And by your vote, we will record that bill favorably. This concludes today's committee agenda. Seeing no other business before the committee, Representative Saroy moves we rise. Without objection, this meeting is adjourned.